Tom F. from Del Mar.
Evening. My name is Tom. I'm an alcoholic. Glad to be here. Very glad to be here. You guys have a great meeting. I got welcomed by Ruben at Foster Freezing before the meeting started. And one of your trusted servants. Coffee and cleanup. You guys do some work around here. You know? I met him. He was up to the house with Damien and Larry. And I asked him if he'd seen his uncle. He had an uncle that was ill, passed recently. Condolences. But yes, he'd gone up to see him before he died, you know. How wonderful it was for him to see him sober. You know, it's always God's will to visit the sick. And it's an example of the transformation that happens here, the change of heart, you know. It's always God's will to go to a meeting. I can visit the sick. I bring myself. Nice. Congratulations on the birthdays. 26 years. 1 year is a long time between drinks. 90 days. You know, thank you for your beautiful hour-long talk in 10 minutes. I really enjoy that. You're sure you're not from New York? Thank Larry and Damien for keeping each other sober and inviting me back here. It was 2013. There's at least three of us in the room who haven't had a drink since then. If there's anyone else, thank you. And I've got a little bit of new material. Apologies for stuff that I repeat. You know, when I look at a room of Alcoholics Anonymous now, I live where there are Torrey Pines, beautiful trees. And I look in a room of Alcoholics Anonymous and I see a bunch of trees. Beautiful trees growing, different sizes and different shapes, you know. And one of my favorite 11-step meditations is, blessed is the man who trusts in God. He's like the tree planted by the stream, sends its roots deep, has no fear in the year of drought and never fails to produce fruit. You know, a tree is known by its fruit. And I look at the trees and I think, you know, they're there, good years, bad years, droughts, storms. They just grow. They provide shade. There's something nice to look at. They provide home for the birds, nuts for the squirrels, whatever they do. They don't have any angst about what's God's will for me, you know. They just do it, and they're helpful, you know. And I see a room full of trees of different sizes and shapes and shade and helping each other grow. And I want to welcome the newcomers. If you have alcoholism, we have a treatment. That's the good news. Bad news is we're your new friends. But that's actually the good news. Once you get to know us, you know, once you get to know us. I want to welcome if there's any members from Al-Anon here tonight. My lovely wife is not with us. She's at an Al-Anon function, but I am still married. Some of you have met her. That's the top of my resume. I'm still Mrs. Farrell's first husband as a result of those steps and your fellowship and God's grace. Thank God. Thank AA. And Al-Anon's a wonderful fellowship. We read As Bill Sees It. They have Lois Remembers. I highly recommend that book, Lois's biography. Read it. You know, it's the darkest day. One of their darkest days was when Ebby went back to drinking, you know. Everybody in this room qualifies. Everybody in this room has been around a little while, has had loved ones drink. Some come back, some not. You know, I don't worry about that. It's our job just to share the love and welcome them. And I like the stories from the old time where Bill comes back about 6 months sober and he says, Lois is cooking dinner and she's been working at that department store. And she was from high society. You know, he had dragged her down. And he says, I give up, Lois. I'm going to get a real job. I'm going to quit working with these drunks. No one's getting sober, you know. My life hung in the balance of this conversation. Because she looks at him and she says, Bill, you're sober. And you never were before. And, you know, the newcomers bring us that gift of honesty and we exchange it for the gift of hope. This is a big gift exchange going on here. Because hope is that most precious thing in life. Without hope, the best circumstances just suck. But with hope, most difficult trials can be endured and used for good. God can use it for good. You know, I've come to believe that. My sobriety date is December 27th, 1990. Only drunks get sober between Christmas and New Year's. I didn't choose that date. God chose it, but I get to keep it. I have two home groups, a Sunday night Del Mar and a Monday night men's group, and a sponsor and sponsees. Actually, I've worked steps with four men in the last 24 years. Two of them have died. 50% mortality if you work steps with me. Both of those men died sober over 30 years in hospital beds the last months of their lives, working with their sponsees from their deathbeds and serene. One of them I was with. Maybe we'll have time to get to that. And you made that comment about all the things we do, you know. I don't have to believe in it. If I got pneumonia and the doctor gives me penicillin, I don't have to believe that it's going to work. If I take it as prescribed and the diagnosis is correct, I get better. At our men's group, we say, we don't care how you feel, we just care what you do. We care that you have a chance that we had to save your life if you got a fatal, incurable, progressive disease. But I'm a feelings kind of guy. My mantra is don't drink and be kind. You know. And I, if I could have done that on my own power, I would have done it. But I'm a feeling kind of guy, you know. Can you? I can describe to you that feeling of, this situation is not only not good, it is not going to turn out good, it's going to get worse, and there's nothing I can do about it. And I can't stand the way I feel. And then I can describe that feeling of, maybe, just maybe, this is going to be okay or at least tolerable. Maybe something good is going to come out of it. And then I can describe that feeling of, wow, this is really going to be difficult, but something is good is going to come out of it. And I'm just describe to you my feelings of the first three steps. Now, I'm from a family, a Catholic Irish alcoholic family. My father, God bless him, great man. I grew up in New York. My father was an attorney, Columbia Law School, marched with Martin Luther King back in the day, started a firm, helped a lot of people, made a lot of money, provided a lot of employment for other lawyers. Also a man whose alcoholism took away his job, his money. One of the most well-read men I ever met. When he died, we cleaned out 100 books on the French Revolution, 8 of them in French. But his alcoholism took away his teeth, his health, his kidneys. He died with untreated alcoholism. He did the best he could. You know what? His parents died with untreated alcoholism. My mother's grandfather died with untreated alcoholism. I'm the oldest of 6. 4 of us are all in the rooms now. God bless it. And I've been old enough to see the next generation, you know. And the good news is that alcoholism is maybe a family disease, but recovery is a family process as well. So I drank for 22 years, and it seemed to me like 20 years of it worked. Now, if my wife was here, you could ask her about the last few. But in 1988, I found myself at family week with my sister at Betty Ford. And I was working out there, and I had no other program. My mother says, your sister needs a bed. Anyway, they had the nerve to ask me about my drinking. Yeah. They're drumming up business, you know. They've ruined my drinking. Because they launched me on 2 years of Chapter 3 purgatory. Thank you for reciting Chapter 3. And I could not control and enjoy my drinking. And drinking was not a problem until I tried to control and enjoy it. I had a beautiful wife, a great job with a good income, a nice house, 3 healthy kids, 2 at that time, a third to be born soon, 2 cars in the garage, you know. It isn't necessary to lose everything to get sober. It helps, but it's not necessary. But I spent 2.5 years stopping for 30 days to prove I wasn't an alcoholic. Don't you see me not drinking? God. My wife would get me a drink. Please, have a drink. I was so irascible. I needed a drink. every cell in my body needed, no, I am not going to have a drink, you know. And in the about 2 years later, in the fall of 1990, I quit the big job, sold the house, dragged my wife and three kids 500 miles for a new job to Northern California that I thought would fix me. Thank you very much. I brought myself with me. Think for a moment about the last days of your drinking. The social drinking at 5 a.m. Think for a moment about how that was and how that felt. Because my last days of drinking were in the garage at a dumpy rental house 500 miles away, underemployed because the job wasn't working out exactly right. Kids weren't happy. They didn't have their friends. My wife was not happy. And I was drinking brandy out of the bottle. You know, I switched from scotch to brandy every night. Scotch before dinner, brandy afterwards. I had cases of fine wine and everything I wanted. I mean, I had plenty of money. If there was a way to control and enjoy my drinking, I would have found it. I remember reading my life insurance. You mentioned suicide. One night I remember where I couldn't get drunk and couldn't get sober and couldn't go to sleep, reading my life insurance policy for the suicide exclusion. If you've ever had that thought, you know, you might be in the right place. And I should add, is there anyone here for their last meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous? We joke, but I have been at some people's last meetings. I don't recommend controlled drinking anymore. If you're not sure this is for you, please come back. Talk to me after the meeting. Talk to Gail. Talk to Larry. Talk to Damien. Give it a shot. Anyway, I called my brother, who was sober at the time, and he says to me, why don't you go to a meeting? Perfect. Best advice I've ever gotten. Best advice I could ever give. He didn't say get a sponsor, work some steps, get a blah, 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 blah. Yeah. He said, why don't you just go to a meeting, you know? Take the patient in proximity with the treatment and let God do the rest. And I was like, all right, fine. How bad can it be? What else? I got nothing else to lose, you know? And I went to central office in San Jose and asked them if they, you know, who was in charge and if they have any meetings for doctors. I was worried about my anonymity. And she says, great, I'll take my number. And she says, go here. And she sent me to a beginner's meeting on a rainy Thursday night, December 27th. And I walked into a room and heard a man take a six-month token and tell my story. And they said, welcome. How can we help you? Here's our book. Here's our steps. How can we help you? Can you come back tomorrow? Can you not drink and come back tomorrow? And I said, wow, why do they want to help me? You know, I found out later. And the next day a man called me who became my first sponsor, and he got my number from the lady at central office, Perry Olson, deceased now, kindest man I've ever met. And he says, I'm your new sponsor. This is great. Get a book. Meet me here, you know. I'm like, how much fun is this going to be? But you know what? I was so miserable, I didn't care. Give me the homework, you know. I had done a lot of homework through my career. And I'm like, this isn't going to work, but I don't care. Just what do you want me to do, you know? And about 12 days in, I'm at a big meeting like this, probably about 200 people on a Friday night. And across the room, on a table about the size of that literature table, there's a young lady falls off and she's having a seizure. And I'm on the other side of the room, and I'm trying to just lay low. All right, it's going to pass. No, she starts turning blue. I'm like, okay, I get up, and I walk across the room, and I get up to her, and I lie her out, and I hold her head, and I clear her airway, and I wait, you know, for a minute or two. It seemed like a long time, but probably only a couple minutes, till I knew she was going to be okay. I didn't wait for her to wake up. I just waited till I knew she was going to be all right. I go back and sit down. I'm reading my book. I'm laying low, and I'm the meeting's almost over. I'm watching the clock. The secretary was a nurse that recognized me. She says, the meeting's about over. Paramedics cart her off. Meeting's about over. We don't have any more time, but we're sure glad Tom was here. We want to thank him, and we can't wait till he gets his 30 days. And, you know, the moral of that story is that I was terrified. But what happened is you folks came up to me and said, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I was afraid you were going to call, I don't know, the medical board or my mother. Well, my mother knew I was going to meetings. She was pretty happy about that. And ever since then, Alcoholics Anonymous has been a safe place for me. And we need to keep these meetings safe. Young ladies go to women's meetings for 6 months to get a sponsor and get straightened out. These meetings need to be a sanctuary. Those of us that are committed members of this fellowship have an interest in keeping these meetings safe. So, my first step was essentially done when I got to a meeting. The second step I noticed, sometime after that, I'm driving home from the meeting and I'm like humming a tune and smiling. You know, and I hadn't laughed for a long time. You guys were all laughing. I didn't know what the hell was so funny. But I started to feel like maybe this is going to work. You know, Bill writes, the step two is our rallying point. Every meeting is an assurance that God will restore us to sanity if we rightly relate ourselves. You know, because I had always prayed, give me this, give me that. I still do, I guess, but I've improved. And my third step, I'm sitting in the rental house with my wife. God bless her for being a homemaker under difficult circumstances. It was early January. The Christmas tree was still up. And she says to me, do you want to go to rehab? And I'm like, you know, your father went to rehab. He didn't stay sober, but he went. Your brother went. Your sister went. And she says, do you want to go to rehab? Well, don't worry about the money. Take a couple of months off. Do whatever it takes, you know. And I look at her like I'm looking at you. And I said, you know, I don't want to go to rehab. But I tell you what, I am going to do whatever these people tell me to do for 6 months, and then we'll see. Because it was obviously working for you, and it was not working for me. You know, I got a glimpse at that moment of what my alcoholism had done to our family. And the other thing that happened at that moment was that was when I started to let God's direction come in. I started to let him write the story instead of me, because I did whatever they said. And so step four, you know, resentments and anger. If anger was China, you know, people, I'd have been China. And one of my resentments was one of the schedule maker at the job that I went to that I thought was going to be good, you know. And it says, unhappiness and futility of life. On that page 66, there's a lot of stuff. You can use fatal five different ways, you know. And I thought, you know, I wasn't getting the work. He was from Stanford. His buddies were from, I was from Cal. My friends from Cal weren't in charge, you know. He's giving work to his friends, and it was messing me up, you know. Sometimes with resentments, it's too soon to tell. And honestly, have I ever given favoritism to my friends? Well, yes. And maybe God was using that because I wouldn't be here if that hadn't worked out the way it did. Because about a month later, a little more than 30 days sober, I got a job offer here in San Diego. And my sponsor, Perry, says, go to the men's group, go to Cass Street, introduce yourself, get a new sponsor, keep working the steps. And I did that, and old Frank Fahey said, listen up, you might learn something. And he said, here's Bob, here's Tom, he's your sponsor. And Bob says, what if I don't want to sponsor Bob? And Frank says, what if I don't want to sponsor you? And Bob sat with me every month, and I got a dictionary in the 12 and 12 and looked up all the words. And I'm an educated man, and I still looked up all the words. And it allowed me to read the literature and allowed the program to have time to work. And I get here, and then my wife's like, okay, we're in a rental house that my friend owns. And he says, good news, I'm giving you a free month's rent. And I said, yeah, what's the bad news? Bad news is you're out in a month. I'm selling the place. And my wife says, this is a little much, so you're going to find me a house. So we find a house, and this takes a few months. I get back from work when I'm hearing this, and then I'm like driving around and weekends, and you know. We find a house. She likes it. We negotiate a deal. Everything's like, okay. All our stuff is in a moving truck. Owen, who was sober at that time, Owen's Movers, Academy Movers. It's all our stuff's in his truck parked on the street waiting to get hijacked to Tijuana. The wife and kids are in the Sereno Valley Marriott demolishing the furniture. I'm at work, and I get a call from the realtor, and she says, we can't find your life savings that was supposed to get wired from Merrill Lynch. Somebody dropped a mop on the keyboard, hit F shift 8, went to Poland. The escrow company calls and says, we're not going to issue the title policy because there's an easement for a deck that was built and we can't find the permit. And it was like, you know, 10 minutes to 5. Okay, click. And I'm like, oh, man. You know, I needed a drink. I really needed a drink. I didn't know what to do. There was nothing I could do. I went back to the hotel, got the fed the kids some French fries and hamburgers, you know. And I realized, oh, it's Monday night. It's Monday night. Where's my keys? I left them back there. It's Monday night. I went to the men's meeting. And Bob Neville, who I still know, you see him at the Aztec games, red and black. When you're red and black, you don't look back. Except that we do look back because our past is our principal asset. Anyway, he says, you got 90 days. And they gave me that token, which is still on my keychain. And I haven't been drunk, unemployed, in jail, divorced. You know, God's will for me, sober, married, employed, help others. And the moral of that story is no matter what's going on, if I apply program to the circumstance, you know, I like to think I'm here because I'm a nice guy. Or I'm here because Larry and Damien invited me. No, no, I'm here to treat my alcoholism. And if I help you, so much the better. Because even today, my alcoholism will take this nice fitted shirt off my back and return later to remove the skin. My friend said, made the point-blank declaration God had done for him what he could not do for himself. You know what? God has done for me what I couldn't do for myself, but he will not do what I can do. He won't open my big book. He won't open my Bible. He won't answer my phone. He won't make calls. He won't call my sponsor. He won't sit with newcomers. But if I do those things, I can be in touch with this power. We had to have a power by which we could live. Not just a power to not drink. We had a power to which we could live. Anyway, after step five, it's interesting. In just a couple pages, it says we're delighted. Now, I use page 68 even today as a little inventory where it says we can match calamity with serenity. You know, I'm still get fear, self-centered fear, realistic fear, unrealistic fear. I don't know the difference. It's a good topic for a meeting. But that page says, just to the extent that we do as God would have us and humbly rely on him, we match calamity with serenity. It's a little two-part inventory, you know. So am I doing what God would have me, and am I humbly relying? Now, I like to think most of the time I'm doing, but I'm willing to be, you know, review at. And most of the time when I'm upset, I'm not humbly relying. Then it goes on to say, we ask God to remove our fear. And I forget to do that. God, remove my fear. And then it says we focus our attention on what he would have us be. Man, I hate that. Because I'm a to-do list guy, you know. I mean, this is funny. A couple of years ago, I was suffering through about 2 years of serious depression. You know, we're not immune from life circumstances and other illnesses. Now, I'd rather be living with depression than dying from cancer, but it was brutal. I couldn't sleep. I was waking up at night. I mean, I sought professional help. I'm going to this therapist, and he's telling me, what do you want me to do? He says, no, you're doing too much. Well, what do you want me to read? Well, I'm going to read this, but it says you're okay. And I'm like, be okay, do, no, it's all right. And I might go home. My wife says, what did the therapist say? And I'm like, I don't know. You'll have to go with me next time, you know? But when it says be, maybe what he wants me to be is patient, kind, tolerant, and loving. Page 83, we clean house with the family and ask our Creator in the morning to give us the way of patience, kindness, tolerant, loving. That isn't always my first thought. Or maybe it's page 99, sober, considerate, and helpful regardless of what anyone else says or does. Ouch. But it says, once we've taken this step with holding nothing, we're delighted. Man, who doesn't want to be delighted? Unhappiness and futility or delighted? Now, delighted reminds me of like when I first was dating Mrs. Farrell. You know? I still feel that way about her. It's all right. Delighted's a good word, you know. Then I got to get to 6 and 7. Now, 6 and 7 is where God gets to show off if I let him. We're entirely ready. It's like a halfway point, you know. It's intransitive verb. It's not an action. It's a pause. Take a look, you know. The guys that played in that football game last week, they were entirely ready to play that game. They had to do a lot of work to get in the NFL and a lot of work to get through the season, but they still had to play the game. And they knew they were going to get banged up, elated, upset, disappointed, and have a Costco-sized bottle of Motrin. You know, we come in here and we get a chance to do life, but we still got to do it. And I don't get to choose which defects take away, but I do get to review them a little bit. One of my biggest was self-pity, you know, and that's another topic for me. I don't know the difference between normal grief and self-pity. If somebody knows that, catch me afterwards. Seriously, it's two of my others are impatience and ingratitude. I'm in a hurry, and I'm not grateful for all these. You know, the fact that I'm, you know, standing alive, still have my intellect, my limbs, a wallet, a car. So after, you know, I'm calling my wife, and you know, one night I'm like coming home. Do you want something from Vons? You know, she'll make dinner. You know, I'm like, I'm just nice enough now to call her. I'm hoping she doesn't, but you know, but she wants chicken and broccoli or something. You know, and so okay, fine. Well, not a novel idea to go to the supermarket at 6 o'clock in the evening. And I'm standing in line, and this lady in front of me is just hammering this poor clerk for some $2 coupon that won't scan. And I'm like, serenity prayer, serenity prayer, serenity prayer. And you know, I want her to say, listen, lady, if I give you $20, will you get the hell out of here, you know? And I just, okay, I get to the clerk. She says, welcome to, you know, I'm like, wow, you know what? You were really patient with that lady. Thank you for coming to work. And she looks at me and she says, you're the first person that's thanked me for anything today. And I'm like, wow. I didn't even really realize, you know, the blessing in it. But it got my attention, so I started thanking people at Starbucks, thanking them at the bank. Then I started thanking people at work, thanking people for coming to work. And I work in a stressful production-based environment. And now they thank me before I can say it. Thanks for coming to work. You know how good it feels to thank somebody and to have somebody else thank you? And now we got an acronym, TFCTW, thanks for coming to work. You know? And another one of my, this is God using things for good, you know? So those defects, I have to take some contrary action if I want them to go away. I got to at least do my part. Another one of my defects is I'm critical and judgmental. I can size you up, and I can size up a circumstance and decide it's not going to work out the way I like in some future paradigm that hasn't happened yet and get upset about it now. I'm sure I'm the only person in the room who can feel that way. Why wait to get upset when you can get upset now? You build up a little steam, you know? Except that if I'm not going to drink over it, what's the point? And maybe, just maybe, it'll turn out better than I can plan, you know? Like my resentment about the schedule maker, too soon to tell. You know, I wouldn't have wound up here in San Diego if he hadn't, if, you know, things had been maybe better in Northern California. And I'm so when I'm driving down the road, my second sponsor, Bob, says, you're not responsible for your first thought, but you are responsible for your second thought and your actions. So I'm driving down the road, and there's some guy in a pickup truck that's got a spare donut on it, and he's going 40 miles an hour, and I'm in a hurry, and all this stuff is in back tied down, and it's going to fly away, and the kids are jumping up on the seat belts, and I'm like, what is he doing on the road, you know? And I can shift and say, you know what? Just maybe he's unemployed. His wife just has breast cancer. He just picked her up from the hospital, and he's going to live at his Duncan Deadbeat's brother-in-law's house because he doesn't have a job and any place else to live, and he's doing the best he can. And then I can shift from judgmental and irritation to compassion, because the price of judging you is judging me. They read Emmett Fox before they had this, Emmett Fox and the Book of James and Sermon on the Mount. And that's the price of being judgmental of you. I don't want to pay that price anymore. I don't want to judge you. I don't want to judge myself. I just want to believe everybody's doing the best they can with what they got, wherever they are. It's much more comfortable. Now, I was lucky about the amends. I didn't have to make a whole lot of amends. My parents, my wife, you know, we make four kinds of amends. We make direct amends, that's best. We make living amends. We can write a letter and we can make amends in kind. A couple of years sober, I had a memory of some of myself and with some hooligan friends breaking into some house back in the Bronx, stealing some stuff and pawning it to get drugs and alcohol under the influence. No excuse, but and it was 25 years from the date when I remembered. You know, I didn't know what to do with that one. I wrote a couple checks, figured out what I thought the present value was, wrote a check to AA Central and a check to my grandmother, who was still alive, my spiritual matriarch. And she says, I don't need the money. What's this? She said, well, it's an AA thing. So she says, you know, you stay with those AAs, Tommy. You're doing better. She was really, she's a saint. God bless her. And she says, you know, she gave me the daily bread. She read one day, she showed it to me. She says, you know, she had me read this. It was one about the way of faith is not the way of certainty. To walk a path of certainty doesn't require any faith. And when it gets to promises, those things started happening for me. On the 10th step, and I was like, I read that and I thought, take inventory when we were wrong. If I'm not wrong, I don't have to take any inventory, do I? You know. And so I'm 5 years sober and I'm clicking along. And now the job's going good and the wife's getting happy and the kids are growing and, the, you know, we got the house, the bills are paid, everything. I'm going to a couple meetings a week. You know, I got some friends. I got a book, you know. And I'm working at the trauma center one night, and I go down to the ER, and there's a guy there that's drunk. And the nurses, I said, does he need it? What's up with him? And they said, oh, he's just drunk. And he's yelling, I've been stabbed. And they said, no, he drove his car into the Thai food restaurant, you know, into. And anyway, he was drunk. He had been stabbed, and he drove his car into the Thai food restaurant. And we brought him upstairs, and his... You know, he bled all night long. We poured more blood into him than anybody I've seen survive. And I go to see him a couple days later. What happened to you? God must have plans. And he says, I'm an alcohol and drug counselor. I was 5 years sober, and I stopped going to meetings other than work. And I had a couple drinks at a party, and nothing bad happened. And I had a couple more drinks a couple weeks later. Anyway, he found himself in Balboa Park doing I don't know what, but I don't know who, but he needs better friends. And I'm standing there getting a little wake-up call. You know, like the metaphor about the seeds planted, you know. Some of them fall on rocky ground and blow away. You see that in the rooms. Some of them fall and grow up and get choked out by weeds and the concerns of life. And others are very fruitful, you know. And it gave me a chance to redouble my program. And then, you know, the 11th step, I love. I'm like, it's... I mean, I really do the prayer and meditation every morning. I start with the usual prayers, then I get around to telling God, you know, what I think, you know, who he should bless and how. But I like this. I use this second tradition. Is God the ultimate authority? Is he a loving God, and is he the ultimate authority? And what parts of my life is he not? And the parts of my life where he's not the ultimate authority are the parts where I still have fear. No surprise. And every now and then I get some real good inspiration. And a few years ago, my first sponsor, Perry, had died. I had bought, after going through that dictionary thing, I went over to Normal Heights and found an old bookstore and got a first edition of the 12 and 12 to give to Bob, that sponsor that sat with me. And I also found a 15th printing first edition of the Big Book signed by Bill W., which I paid a pretty penny for. And I kept it. I bring it out maybe once a year and show it to folks when I took a token, that kind of thing. So anyway, Diane, who's also a member of our fellowship, and the two of them had done just so much service, H&I in prisons and all kinds of stuff, always running around. I don't know how they did it. And she calls and says, Perry's memorial, such and such, can you come up? And I was such a busy week. I'm trying to get some quiet time, and what am I going to say, and how much he helped me, and how many others. And I hear the voice. It says, get the book. Get the book? I said, yeah, get the book. I heard that. What do you mean? No, get the book and bring it to Diane. She'll know what to do with it. Oh, the book. So I go up to the memorial in Northern California, and I say a few words about how kind Perry was and thank him. And then I say, and if you haven't seen Bill W.'s signature, I have this book. It's got an inscription written by me today to Diane, and it's got Bill W.'s inscription to AA San Diego. And I give it to Diane, and she flips out because she had a hole in her heart where her unrecovered drunken first husband had kept her first edition of the Big Book in the divorce and unwilling to give it back. Who knew? And she was like, oh, I'm going to find out. It's printing. Who signed it and all? And she was just went great. It was just such a blessing. and then I had last year, not too long ago, I think in April, I'm back visiting my mom and I'm in her church and we're sitting there. My wife's there and the voice says, find the house. Find the house, you know, conscious contact. I don't always want conscious contact, you know. I wanted unwanted consciousness. Find the house. I'm like, oh, the house. So after the service, I get, I call it my grandmother's choice. It's Christ Church, Riverdale, but her ashes are in the walls, so she's watching over things. It has a cornerstone from 1864. Bill uses that cornerstone metaphor. I know what it means. Anyway, I got a break because my mother's friend took her home, and I said, we'll go get stuff for lunch, and we're driving around. I'm looking for this house. My wife gets an alley call from a cousin in Milwaukee whose husband's just a terrible drunk. It sounds like he might be getting sober. But anyway, she drops me in a minute for an Al-Anon call, and she's on the phone. She doesn't notice that I'm driving through this neighborhood, and I stop and park, and I get out. Now, I'm dressed nicely. I got my Bible. I walk up to what I think is the house and knock on the door. And I asked the lady, who doesn't even want to talk to me, have you lived here 40 years or 50? Trying to figure out how long ago. No. What do you want? No, I haven't lived here. And I'm like, okay. And I get back in the car. You know what? I wanted freedom from this. I was ready to make amends, direct amends, for my actions of 45 years ago. And I didn't get a chance to, but I got a chance to do my utmost. And I got freedom from it. 12-step, man, it's so great to have the sponsors that I've had. One of them, the other one that died, we were at his deathbed. And he spent the last 5 months of his life in the hospital. I'd visit him on rounds after work, and I'd read the book to him. And even in his last breath, he had a sense of humor. Two or more are gathered, take up a collection. And it was a half a dozen guys that he sponsored, 10 years sober, reading the book, around his bed, crying. And his wife kissed him goodbye for what she knew would be the last time and said, you guys need a meeting. So when I ask if there's anyone here for their last meeting, I've been to some people's last meeting. And I call my sponsor and say, you're still alive? And he says, yeah. And he says, and you're not in jail because you still have your cell phone. Thank you very much. You know what? That's a gratitude check right there. And I got a host of men I've tried to help with steps all through the years. Some of my sponsees are here. Thank you for coming. Some of them have been very successful. The ones that have stayed sober have been the ones that have made effort to work with others. Some of them have wonderful lives. Others haven't. That's not up to me. That's up to God. It's only up to me to share what I know with them, not tell them what they do to get sober, but tell them what I've done. November, I take Mrs. Farrell to Kauai for a little vacation, and it's very nice, and we're there a few nights, and one evening she's reading or doing needlepoint, and I'm like, I'm going to go to a meeting. There's a meeting across the street from the hotel on the west side of Kauai. I walk over to this meeting, a second-step meeting. They read the second step. Halfway through the meeting, a guy shows up who I've known for 8 years. I haven't seen him in two. I try to help him work steps in Encinitas for 6 years. He'd get a year or two, then he'd go get, fall off and more wreckage and back and forth. Nice guy. Everybody loves him. Could not or would not, really stay with it. But I hadn't seen him for a couple of years. I wonder where he was. Wow, good to see you. He's been in Hawaii and his life is chaos again. And I'm like, dude, I'm staying across the street. Be here tomorrow night at 6. Bring your book. Get a notebook, I'm like, I'm going to start writing his steps, It's nice to take time and read the whole book, but sometimes you just got to get to it. I like to get people to write down the thing that's bothering them the most, that they'll never share, put it on a piece of paper, stick it in their pocket, be done with it. You don't have to share it if you don't want to. And then let's get to your mother, your father, your employer, your girlfriend. Let's get you some relief. Let you get enough time from the drink so you got a chance. I get back to Del Mar, and I'm sharing this on the Sunday night, and I talk about that, and I say, there's a prayer I very rarely use. And the reason I rarely use it is that it always works. And it always works in ways that I don't predict and don't like. And the prayer is, God, put someone in my life today that I can help and show me how to do it. Like I'm sitting at Starbucks down by Loma USD, Linda Vista one day by the fountain. I had an early day. I was going to go to Drunks Only. Everything's nice. I'm reading my Bible and my big book. And I've got my coffee. And this gal comes up to me and says, she's in Spanish, do you know the way to this health clinic, Centro de Salud and I'm like, yeah, I know where it is. It's not far, but it's hard to explain. I'm like, all right, fine, I'm sitting here, Okay, get in the car. We'll take you over there. And she with her big three aunties piling my little car. I'm like going to be late for the meeting. Sometimes you just have to do what's in front of you. So the morning after getting back from Hawaii, I wake up at 4:30. I don't always like to, but sometimes I do. So I'm saying my prayers. Then I go downstairs to get my coffee. And the text came at 4:49. I looked at my phone. And it was from a sponsee that's moved to Pennsylvania that started drinking again, and he's texting me for help. I'm like, dude, you know, I just said that prayer, you know. I'm like talking to him on the way home and on the way to the gym, and I'm like, dude, you know what to do? Come back into the fold. Get to a meeting. Get your book. Write out some inventory. Sit down with, find somebody local and sit down with them, man. Don't waste any more time. I reconciled with my father. I have a lot of time left, but the 10th tradition helped me. We ceased fighting anyone. It's no virtue. When my sponsor finally said, look, you know, you talked about why he isn't getting sober and all that. I never met him, but you make him look really good. And he had a perfect right to make his choices. So those of us in the room who aren't exactly happy with our parents, you make them look really good. Just go and be nice to him. And the last 10 years of his life, I just went and been nice to him. I stopped praying for him to get sober, and I stopped asking him to go to meetings, none of that. And when he died, I got to go to his hospice and see him and tell him God gave me the perfect father with my mother there and my son who was his namesake. The 12th tradition talks about anonymity. You know, I have some Greek heritage. The Greeks in mythology used to believe that strangers would come, gods dressed up like strangers, and if you weren't nice to them, they'd get you. You know, Colin Ray has a song, you know, what if Jesus came back like that in a hobo hat on an old flat car and stuff like that. So, you know, I have a friend that's from Finland, praises God and is glad to be alive. He's not one of us. He's a doctor. He's a great guy, husband, father, just a wonderful man, helped a lot of people. But his father, long before he was born, long before my friend was born, his father was in Finnish ski patrol. 1939, the Russians invade Finland. You know, I like to go skiing. In fact, I may go tomorrow. There's some snow. But I like drive up there with my car and my speaker tapes and my, you know, and I charge the hill for 2 hours and have a cappuccino. You know, no, this isn't like that. And his father gets shot in the chest, bleeding. His comrades drag him back, and he survives. It's amazing. Amazing he survived. Kind of like my 5-year guy with the stab wound. But he didn't have medical care. But it's also amazing they didn't shoot him. I mean, think about it. If you're running from the Russians and you're slowed down carrying a wounded, they catch you and they kill everybody. If you leave him there, he's suffering, and if they catch him, they torture him and find out where you went. It's remarkable they didn't shoot him. And I tell that story because in Alcoholics Anonymous, we do not shoot our wounded. We welcome them, we give them coffee, and we drag them along with us until they get well enough to help someone else. So I'm going to leave you with one of my favorite, most challenging quotes, a paraphrase of John Wesley. Do all the good you can, for all the people you can, in all the ways you can, for as long as you can. We can't always change the world, but we can keep our side of the street clean and show love to the people around us. Don't drink and be kind. Thank you.